Well, if you were to look on the internet, a quick internet search would very quickly show you that sermons on Psalm 88 are very, very rare indeed. One very famous central London church, known for its preaching the Bible, has preached on this psalm, I did a search, once in the last 65 years. Hymns and songs using the words and themes of Psalm 88 are even rarer. Are we embarrassed by it? Do we think that we know better than God? Well, the problem is it's here in his songbook, compiled by him to be sung as God's people gather. I think perhaps the Scottish minister, Henry Light, came close to the themes and the topics of, that we see in Psalm 88 with his great hymn. Do you know the song, Abide With Me? That hymn is actually taken from Luke 24, verse 29, when the disciples asked Jesus to abide with him, for it is toward the eventide, towards the evening, and the day is spent, they say. Now that hymn, I think, voices some of, but not all, some of the darkness that we see in Psalm 88. I guess that is why, for example, Abide With Me was sung so often in the trenches in World War I. It was why it was sung, I think, at the London Olympics opening ceremony. Do you remember that in 2012 with Emily Sandé? I think that was incredibly brave, wasn't it? She sang 5 of the original 8 verses of Abide With Me, very slowly, with this heartbeat drumming behind it. A brave inclusion by the producer, Danny Boyle. It was haunting, but so appropriate because it voiced within that big kind of narrative the reality of our nation over the last 100 war-torn years, bloody and death-filled as they have been. Now, why did that song, particularly just after the opening ceremony in 2012, why did that song, Abide With Me, get so much press? Well, perhaps because in that moment, people had time. They had words with appropriate somber music to voice what they feel and know to be true about the reality of our corporate existence. But also individually, that is the reality for so many, isn't it? Life is darkness. It is loss. It is bereavement. It is pain. It is struggle. And if people don't have the money and the health and the privilege or the education to stop, and so often British middle class folk, we numb pain very well. Well, this is their existence, day after day after day. Listen to that old hymn, Abide With Me, as it cries out to God, just to get a flavor. It says this, Abide with me. Fast falls the eventide. The darkness deepens. Lord, with me abide. When other helpers fail and comforts flee, help of the helpless, oh, abide with me. Like Abide With Me, Psalm 88, note, it, you'll see it there. It's sung in the first person singular. It's the lament of someone experiencing the pain, and it's a death-like alienation from God with no relief and uniquely no light. And the song leads to an inevitable end of rhetorical and personal exhaustion. Look at the last verse in verse 18. You have taken from me friend and neighbor, darkness is my closest friend. I know this might be a rude word, but the Church of England, yeah, you can boo and so on, the Book of Common Prayer of the Church of England has Psalm 88 set for Good Friday. Why? Because it voices the alienation and the torment of Gethsemane before Golgotha. So why on earth are we looking at this evening? Two reasons. because there's always a song to sing. A day might be coming when you feel completely alone, completely in the dark, with no hope. And this song is you at that moment. You need it. And so be ready with it. Second reason. The world is full of people who need this song to sing. And we have the privilege to be able to sing it with them. So many out there think that church has nothing to offer them. That their lives are just either too dark, too messy, too full of sin. Well, this is a song for people in their darkest of times, for the broken and for the needy, for the alone, because it voices the pain that they feel and know. And God, in His love, has given us this song to sing, a voice to the voiceless, if you like. Now, do you see where this psalm is positioned? If you've got your Bibles open, you'll just flip over the page, Psalm 89. You'll see at the end of Psalm 89, it says Book 4. That is, Psalm 88 comes at the end of Book 3, the central collection. It's an individual lament beside the concluding corporate lament of Psalm 89. Now, both are very similar. They voice affliction, rejection, alienation, abandonment, and both appeal to the distant memory of God's covenant steadfast love. So that is where this song, this lament sits, Psalm 88. But look how it begins. Flip back to the beginning, because it's unique. With a double length, as we call them, superscriptions, verse naught, if you like, the bit there in italics. Do you notice that? What do we learn from that? It's quite interesting. At the end, we get the author's name, Heman the Ezrahite. We see it's a collection in the Sons of Korah. That's not the heavy metal rock band that some of you are thinking of, by the way. No, and we also see it's a song. A maskil, actually, more specifically. And that is a song of instruction or wisdom. And it's according to, and I can never pronounce this, Mahalath Lilinoth or something like that, which is probably an instrument, as you see in your footnote. Now, this superscription has six terms, uniquely. Why? Well, no one really knows. Apart from, it will always make this psalm stand out. And most think that is intentional. This likely indicates the importance to believers and the church down through the ages. That is, don't ignore it. Sadly, I think we have in the church. Universal, probably to our detriment over the last 100 years or more. So what is this often ignored psalm about? Well, the big clue comes with the last word. Unfortunately, not in the NIV, because the last word in the Hebrew is actually the word darkness. See, this psalm hauntingly shows us that sometimes in life, there are no answers to the repeated pleas. Sometimes it's just silence from God. There's no answers. There's no light. And ultimately, therefore, the psalm is a plea for God to simply listen from that dark realm of life that consumes this author, Heman, each day and night. And so we see that's how he pleads. Look at verse 1, it's day and night. Verse 9, it's every day. And then in verse 13, he wakes up in the morning, he pleads again and again and again. He is praying to the Lord all the time. But however much he prays, his circumstances remain. Verse 17, you see, all day long they surround him to the darkness of the end of verse 18. Now, perhaps the glimmer of hope might be in the fact that Heman keeps on praying. In spite of his circumstances, he entrusts himself to the Lord there in capitals, and therefore it's Yahweh, the covenant Lord, whose sovereignty over the darkness never seems to be in doubt for this singer. Like the hymn, I guess, the darkness deepens, Lord, with me abide. If you wanted an outline, I'm afraid you're not going to get one. I could give you one, and I have actually one written down out here, but there's actually not much point. Most scholars look at this and they go, actually, it seems quite unstructured, purposefully, in order to mirror the chaos of the darkness of human's life. But I'll give you some if you want, because we're quite British and we like outlines, and so I might shout out a few things as we go. Some of you are old enough to remember Simon Garfunkel's song that began, "Hello Darkness, My Old Friend." Well, that's kind of what we got. In Psalm 88, we see the living death of abandonment and pleading with God to listen in the darkness. That's pretty much it. And that's where we're going. So if you want a first point, it's verse kind of 1 to 9. It's crying out to the Lord, and it's day and night. Follow with me in verse 1 if you can. The Lord, you are God who saves me. It's God of deliverance there. Day and night I cry out to you. And that's literally to your face. That will come up later in the psalm as well. May my prayer come before you. Turn your ear to my cry. Do you feel the level of abandonment? But he's still praying to the Lord, to the God of deliverance. He wants to be heard. Now, he isn't abandoning God for other gods. He isn't being agnostic or secular. He comes before the only Lord that he knows will save. And he cries out day and night, literally to God's face. Do you see the urgency in him? It's an urgent cry. And you can hear it, can't you? Day and night, every day, verse 9. In the morning, verse 13. Every moment. But you can also see the urgency. He wants the Lord to turn your ear, he says in verse 2. Also look out in verse 9. He says, I spread out my hands to you. How urgent does that look? Why? Well, look at his experience. It's death-like. Verse 3, I'm overwhelmed with troubles and my life draws near to death. Literally, Sheol there, the eternal grave. Verse 4, I'm counted among those who go down to the pit. I'm like one without strength. I'm set apart with the dead, like the slain who lie in the grave, whom you remember no more, who are cut off from your care. And note now how it changes. That near-death-like experience is followed by him now going, hey, look, God, this is how you're involved. Verse 6, Lord, you've put me in the lowest pit, in the darkest depths. Your wrath lies heavy on me. You have overwhelmed me with all your waves, literally breakers there, the biggest and most dynamic word that could be used for water. And so deep are his feelings of abandonment. He likens himself to being this dead outcast, like those abandoned as dead, their bodies scattered over a battlefield, unburied, unloved, ignored. Look, I've got to say, this is in the Bible, by the way. And I wonder, are you shocked by that? This is a song for the gathered church to sing, but look at the level of accusations to the Lord. He's saying, you know, literally saying, you're not mindful, or in our version, that you don't remember in verse 5. He feels cut off from God's hand. He's in the pit, verse 4, and he's clear how he's got there. He's saying, God, this is your handiwork. And look how bad it is. He's in the depths, the regions of the dark deep. And in verse 7, he continues with the images of watery darkness, waves now illustrating the overwhelming weight of God's wrath that he feels on him. Verse 8, you again, God, have taken from me my closest friends and have made me repulsive to them. I am confined and I cannot escape. My eyes are dim with grief. And this is where it kind of rubs, doesn't it? His affliction is so awful that his companions are horrified. They don't want to be around him. Have you ever gone through something so hard in life that people just go, oh, I'm not going near that, and they walk away from you? They can't cope, and therefore they shun him, only intensifying, of course, his abandonment. And there's no escape from it. He's shut in. He's confined in it. In verse 8, afflicted such that his eyes grow dim, drowning under God's affliction. The irony of this section that there's actually loads of beautiful Hebrew wordplay that goes in and about it, but it can't mask the reality. And in verse 9, he recalls his plea from verse 1. Now more personally, he says, I call to you. And more obviously, I spread out my hands to you, Lord. But then he quickly returns to protest, appealing to God. And here's where the appeal shifts slightly. And this is, if you like, second point. He's appealing for deliverance. And now it's every day in verse 9 through to verse 12. And if you cast your eyes down, you'll see verse 10 to 12. He uses all these kind of rhetorical questions, doesn't he? In hope that they will motivate the Lord to action, to preserve his life. He's daring to question the Lord. And he longs for the Lord to stop the darkness so he can look at it. Verse 10, rise up to praise. The questions continue. Now with a series of contrasts, verse 11 and 12, where the realm of death is described with four words. So we get grave, we get abandon or destruction there, the darkness and the land of oblivion or forgetfulness. Placed alongside, those four words are placed alongside four other words that typify God's activity with his people. So we get his love, we get his faithfulness, his wonders and his righteousness. And all of that together to appeal to the Lord anything to bring relief. And the rest of the song continues in the same way. In fact, the questioning, the language used gets even darker. Third point, last six verses, 13 to 18. We see here he's continuing to question the Lord's assaults, but now in the morning. Look at verse 13. His prayer is literally, come to meet the Lord in the morning. He's so desperate. And so verse 14, he cries out, why, Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? Do you remember the face back in verse 1? The questions of verse 14 show his pleas earlier remain completely unanswered. He's alienated. He's abandoned. As God hides his face of blessing from him, you, Lord, hide your face. This is as awful as the passage suggests. Because the Lord is not just refusing to look in such a way as to show sympathy. The Lord is actually refusing to look and so to take action. And this is the difficult reality of this psalm. Sometimes God is silent. Sometimes there's no comfort. Sometimes there is no rest from the terrors that we face in this life. Well, what are they? Here in the psalm we see, look, the worst comes in verse 16 and 17. And here we get four very, very unusual words in the Hebrew. Why such unusual words? Well, likely because they confuse, because they're hard to understand, just like the circumstance that he is facing. That is, the words function to kind of amplify the confusion that he is feeling, the confusion feeling of alienation from the Lord. And so he says, they cut me off, he's destroyed me. The wrath at the beginning of verse 16 is literally the great fury or the burnings. And the burning image is then matched, if you like, by the ferocity of the flood that closes in verse 17. These are relentless, all day, like the pleas of verse 1. But these torturous fires and the floods never ultimately consume, which of course is a torture in itself, isn't it? He's nearly burnt to death. He nearly drowns again and again and again. And then the song closes with verse 18 as he cries out, restating verse 8, but now that loved ones shun the afflicted one. And despite all of the lost sleep, all the pleas to the Lord for relief, friends and loved ones gurgle into the watery darkness at the end. And that, my friends, is Psalm 88. Should we go? It is the darkest of all psalms. But I want to ask, why is it here? And should we sing it? Maybe you're asking, why have you ruined my happy Sunday? Three things to close. Just points of application, if I may. Psalm 88 is here, I think, positioned at the end of book 3 to give us a window into the struggles of God's people as they faced in exile. That's the big theme, if you like, of book 3, the central part of the book of Psalms. But the problem is, we're this side of the cross, aren't we? So Psalm 88 supremely opens up for us a window into the darkness of the ultimate exile. That is when Jesus truly faced for us on the cross. How? Well, I think in reading the plight of Heman there in Psalm 88, we begin to better understand the abandonment that Jesus faced in the Garden of Gethsemane and on the cross when he cries out Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken or abandoned me? If you want to know what alienation from God's love looks like and feels like, it feels like darkness, fiery consuming wrath, drowning breakers. And that's what we learn in Psalm 88. And Jesus lived, breathed, and suffered all of Psalm 88 for me and for you. Do you see more clearly what you deserve, having looked at Psalm 88? Do you see more clearly what Christ has gone through for you? Do you see how good the good news really is? See, Psalm 88 is here, I think, so that we might understand, love and cherish Jesus so much more and share him with so many more needy people. Secondly, Psalm 88 is also here because it reaches beyond Babylon, Gethsemane and Golgotha to the lives of believers who live, I think, in perpetual darkness. From the first word of Psalm 88 to the last, Heman's example is to keep praying to the Lord. He never stops, but the song ends with that lived reality, doesn't it, of darkness, a darkness that is deep and death-like. And that is the experience of so many. Yes, even here in lovely middle-class Guildford. Don't be the neighbor that ignores, the companion that shuns, unable to cope with the pain of what someone is going through. Don't offer those inane platitudes saying, oh, there'll be a better day coming. That is utter nonsense for so many in this world. Be a friend. Be like Christ. A friend who, like in Proverbs 17, says, I'm going to love you at all times. However hard your life gets, I'll be there. Point them to the reality that their darkness may never, ever be lifted, but that the Lord is still sovereign, that the Lord is still rich in his steadfast love, and ultimately is offering his light and love through his Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. Yes, show them that suffering and rejoicing can coexist in Christ, but don't preach. Give them a big hug. Cook them some food. Listen to them. Cry with them. Walk with them in the waves and the fiery storms of their life. But have the humility to learn, because the weaker are indispensable to the church, Paul says in 1 Corinthians 12. The problem is that very, very few dare to come close to that suffer and really suffer. And as a church in the United Kingdom, we have systematically withdrawn from the broken and the needy to our shame, to our embarrassment, and very obviously to our detriment. And so Psalm 88, I think, gives us a window into the reality of those who live in perpetual darkness among us. But also, this is an experience which continues to insult brothers and sisters today all around the world. The persecuted church is growing and our brothers are being tortured and executed for their faith. And if you want to know something of their existence, sing Psalm 88. We mustn't be embarrassed to sing songs like this. And if we are embarrassed, we probably haven't understood the function and the role and the gift of the church, and our minds and our emotions are probably skewed. They are worldly and secular. God has ordained this song to be here for his people when they gather. And if you ask anyone who's actually really going through a very, very hard time right now, strangely, they'll open up Psalm 88 and go, I love that. Because the dark abandonment and alienation that it speaks of comforts them. It gives them a voice. Broken and needy people so often leave churches, and the one reason they do so again and again is because they often have no words to voice their pain. How wonderful that God has given us a song like this for the dark and the silent times. And how much more wonderful to know that this dark abandonment was ultimately endured and defeated by Christ on the cross, so we don't have to experience it eternally. Thirdly, much more briefly, what kind of church do you want to be? I don't think Psalm 88 is the kind of song that we want to sing every week. So don't, I'm not saying that at all. But Psalm 88, I think, is a song that helps us to remember the plight of so many in this world. Secondly, I think it is a song that should mold every word that we say and sing when we gather, so that we don't push the broken and the needy away. Thirdly, it is a song that should in part help define the mission, I think, of every church as we look out and see those who are hurting so much in the world around us. Fourthly, it is a song that should sober us, but also it is a song that should enable our hearts to just burst open, because this horrible darkness, this horrible abandonment, this ultimate crushing and fiery storms, Jesus lived that. And Jesus took his last breath enduring it for me and even for you. Look, I pray your heart is melted and overjoyed more today than ever before by this good news. I know it's hard to hear, but I hope and pray that you as a church are more in love and excited to get out to share this amazing news, that Jesus has taken this on himself for me and for them. The people of Guildford. Do so with Christ-like, practical, big hearts, big hugs, compassion. But do so with the saving good news of Jesus Christ. What a great message we have to share.